Welcome to the Claim Hunters. I am Chris Tidball, an executive claim consultant with Subro IQ, where we routinely find our clients significant amounts of trapped cash. On our show, we will explore the epidemic of trapped cash across not only the insurance industry, but the global business landscape. Our guests bring a unique perspective on challenges faced by businesses that impact their bottom line. We believe that everyone has a great story to tell, and this is the forum to tell it. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and stick around to learn more about how you can be a guest in 20 minutes or less. Welcome to the Claim Hunters. Today we have John Anger, CEO of Orion Fleet Intelligence, with us. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Chris.
So, John, we've talked a little bit in the past, and you've got a fascinating background and a fascinating product that we're going to learn more about, but you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get into this field?
So my background is fascinating. I think you need to get out a little bit more. Actually, I spent the bulk of my life in the insurance and reinsurance space, from retail brokerage, reinsurance brokerage, ran a carrier for a bit. In between there, I took a five-year hiatus into the automated external defibrillator business of all things. And the Orion folks were three doors down the hall. And struck up a conversation with them one day. They explained what they did, and I said, hey, there's some interesting insurance application to this, and made a phone call to a company and introduced them, and it's still a client today. We stayed in touch over the years, and when I left what I was doing before here, was doing some consulting, started consulting for them, and one thing led to another, and here I am, 3.5 years later.
No, that's great. It's funny. So I'm driving home from work yesterday and I'm behind this commercial vehicle and it's somewhat driving somewhat erratically. Right. And I thought of you. I'm like, we're talking about this tomorrow. I mean, how does Orion help in situations like this?
So maybe it's easier to start at the beginning a little bit. And if it's all right with you, give you a little bit of a view into, you know, how we focus on things.
Sure.
And around that. You know, our focus is heavily driven by insurance, and all of our partnerships, or excuse me, all of our fleet level relationships stem from partnerships we have with insurance companies. I give that as a backdrop because, as you well know, commercial auto insurance is a disaster.
Yes.
You know, rates have been going up double digits for the better part of a decade. Everybody's losing, almost everybody's losing money. We feel that a lot of that is a function of, despite the fact that telematics in general have proliferated,
right,
people don't actually do anything with the information, particularly in smaller fleet environments who lack, you know, staffing, infrastructure, knowledge, experience, et cetera. So what we really try to do is distill things down for people and make it easy for them to actually do something with that information and change driver behavior. And in turn, reduce accidents. To your specific point of the erratic driving, we take a bit of a different approach. One, we don't see a lot of people coach, and I can give you a little bit more view on our coaching approach. And when people do, they'll often benchmark on a driver score, which is maybe a cocktail of six different things that makes it hard for the driver to figure out what they need to do differently.
Right.
In order to improve their behavior. Another common benchmark would be hard braking. There's some technical problems with that, and that if you're not recalibrating the device for vehicle weight, you're going to get false readings, which obviously that's kind of hard to benchmark people on if the numbers aren't right.
Right.
There's also aspects to it that, you know, sometimes hard braking is good. You know, when the little kid runs out in the street chasing his ball, probably a good thing to brake really quickly. Right?
Oh, sure.
We actually focus on speeding, and we find if we can reduce speeding, it eliminates other aggressive and undesirable driving behaviors to the tune of an 80 to 90% correlation, depending a little bit on class of business. So that's really how we go about it. Interestingly, we find that north of 60% of the people we engage with already had something in place. And despite that, we're able to make really significant improvements. 11 miles an hour more over the speed limits is one of our key benchmarks and really what we drive our coaching around. And we'll generally cut that by 50% after about 90 days of engagement. And it's about a 30% reduction in accident frequency. So
interesting.
Kind of reinforces that data without action point, right? You have this whole cohort of people that had something in place and they weren't using it effectively, which is even a little bit worse than not improving the behavior and the driving outcomes. You're actually arming the plaintiff bar.
You know, right.
Chris has been speeding for 3 years and you never say anything. And
sure.
He hits a school bus this afternoon. It's probably not going to dress up very well in court.
No, that's a really good point. And we all know how crazy litigation is these days. So I'm an underwriter for I run underwriting for a insurance company. Mm-hmm. And you're a insured. You've got a fleet of 100 vehicles and you've already got a solution in place. What's the compelling reason to move from the solution in place to your solution?
So oftentimes we'll ride alongside of what's already in place.
Okay.
We'll get a GPS device and a splitter out to the insured and they can keep what they have, you know, if they've already optimized all their routing based upon a certain software provider. Great, keep it. We're going to send you this item, plug it in, and it's simple. It's like 60 seconds to plug the thing in. And we'll get what we need. We can help work with you to improve the safety aspects of your business. Oftentimes, our carrier partners will provide a meaningful discount as well if somebody opts to go with us. So the premium savings in a number of circumstances are more than the cost, well more than the cost of our services.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if you're talking about, you know, reducing accident frequency by, you know, 30, 40, 50%, I mean, that's pretty substantial. I mean, that's got to be a compelling reason for the insurer and the insured to jump on your services.
Yeah.
I mean, what's holding people back?
So I think it's a number of things. You know, there's sort of that institutional momentum or lack of inertia, right? Change is hard for people. So I think oftentimes it just, you know, it takes them a bit to get their mind around things. In some circumstances, and we try to be very careful about this, it can come across a little bit like, you know, let's say I'm in charge of, you know, vehicles within an organization. It could come across a little bit like, hey, are you doing your job?
Right.
So we try to be careful in terms of how we present that, and particularly in smaller fleets, you know, the people in charge of those vehicles have an awful lot of other things on their plates.
Okay.
So it's really more about, you know, getting them to understand that we're here to help and simplify and make your life easier. I think there's been this broad presumption, particularly in the insurance and reinsurance community, that, you know, telematics will fix everything. You just need to plug it in and everything will be fine. Which kind of gets to another piece of things. Part of what we do is watch to make sure that devices stay plugged in. And we've been approached by a few different MGAs that are getting data from a provider, but it shows that 30% of the portfolio is unplugged.
Interesting.
So this whole view of, okay, just plug it in and everything's going to take care of itself, I think is, you know, there's, I don't know, ELD mandate was in 2017 or thereabouts. So they've been around for a while, but understandably the ELD mandate hit the trucking and DOT regulated sectors more than general commercial auto. So, you know, I think there was a period where, okay, this, and it's almost like human nature, right? Like we're such a technologically driven world at this point that you think tech can probably even more so in the day and age of AI, right? Like you just get the tech and it's going to sort things out for you. Yeah, at the end of the day, it really isn't about the technology, but it takes a bit for people to start understanding that. And I think, yeah, particularly over the last 6-12 months, we're really seeing a surge of people really starting to grasp the fact that, okay, great, you have a camera in the vehicle, you have a GPS device in the vehicle, either one. But if you're not actively monitoring to make sure things stay connected, and in turn, you know, looking at what the driving behavior actually is,
right,
nothing's going to change. And I think finally people are starting to understand that aspect.
So if I'm a driver, let's say I work for a large fleet, I'm a driver, my fleet's not using your services, and I just don't want to be watched. I can unplug stuff and nobody's going to know.
Generally speaking, yes.
Wow, that's
You know, in
I mean,
theory.
that's concerning because you hear, we hear about some of these horrific accidents out there involving commercial vehicles. And, it doesn't seem like the accident should have happened. Had the driver been doing what they should have been doing, the accident never would have been to happen. And in many cases, people would still be alive today.
Yeah. And, it comes down to nobody's going to know unless somebody watches, right?
Right.
And, a lot of times the way things are configured, and this comes back a little bit to this tech and data view on telematics, where if you are in charge of a fleet of the company, you are bombarded with information. It's your classic information overload. And frankly, I think it's creating more exposure to the more that people say, hey, we can find this on AI and this and that and the other thing, and we're going to, flag all these videos for you. Somebody's got to review them, right?
Right,
So,
exactly.
and most times, particularly, it's one thing if you have 4,000 vehicles, you have a team of people that are charged with looking after how things operate. But for most people, it's they're not thinking of themselves as a vehicle company. They're thinking of themselves as a landscape or a social service organization. And
Right.
vehicles are just one aspect of that. And more often than not, whoever's in charge of the vehicles is going to have a bunch of other jobs, right?
Right.
So their ability to spend time and action things is limited. So it creates problems.
Oh yeah, no, I could see that. I mean, so now we bring in a whole new dynamic with the world of autonomous vehicles. I mean, how do you play in the world of autonomous vehicles that presumably should be doing what they're told to do?
It's an interesting topic. I think there's an element of people think they're around the corner. Yes, there's some stuff that's around the corner, but you look at historical changes in vehicle technology. It's a decade plus before
Right.
things really get like a 70, 80% penetration in the marketplace.
Okay.
They're not technically they're already here, but they're not going to be here full stop tomorrow or anything like that. We'll see what the adoption ultimately ends up being too, right? Putting aside the commercial space, in the personal space, I would expect there's going to be a not insignificant number of people that don't want to give up control to a machine effectively.
Right. Yeah, you can see that. I mean, you hear about these crazy Waymo stories about the cab that had a hallucination and didn't let the person out. And the other reality is, most of the fleets, most businesses in this country are 500 or less people, right? The majority of businesses.
Well,
So most fleets are small. I mean, we're talking 50, 100.
70% of the DOT regulated fleets are three vehicles or less.
Okay, so they're obviously not having a person in charge of watching those, right? So you're the solution. So if I'm the owner of a company and my insurer is saying I can get a 20% discount if I install this solution, it seems like a no-brainer, right? I mean, I've essentially hired someone to be my, risk manager to oversee, everything going on with my fleet.
And I think what's also starting to happen is people are better understanding, and we try to help people understand what I'll call the economics of insurance.
Yep.
If you save a dollar of loss, you like to think that that's a dollar of premium you're going to save. But your average insurer call their expense ratio 30%. Let's say they want a 10% profit margin. That's 40 points that they have to knock up the expected loss for to really reflect the premium they need to take in. So in that scenario, that dollar of loss is really saving you a dollar 67 of premium.
Right.
And
Interesting. So,
increasingly people are understanding that as well.
yeah. So if let's say I'm a chief claims officer inside an insurance company, and I'm concerned about rising severities, right? I see my commercial auto book. I see the severities going up. Whose shoulder am I going to tap on in my peer group? Is it the risk manager, the underwriter, the CEO, the CFO?
So what we normally do is first engage actually with underwriting
Okay.
for a few reasons. One, what we do has a more immediate and direct impact on their day-to-day, so to
Yep.
speak. They also tend to have what I'll call more authority and weight in an
Okay.
organization than some of the other areas. and their point of the spear in terms of engaging with the insured, right?
Right.
And we normally work with underwriting and also with loss control, risk engineering, whatever the company might refer to it as. And they're certainly important and engaged with us, but you think how most, loss control goes, it's post-bind, it's, somebody going out and visiting the site, that type of thing. And equally, and we're seeing this more and more from our insurance partners, most insurance companies can't afford to loss control every account.
Right.
It ends up that those resources get pointed at the bigger stuff. And ironically, oftentimes the bigger folks are going to be the ones that kind of have, I'll say, their act together.
Yeah.
Because they have a team of people charged with, managing vehicles, minimizing risk. It's almost the accounts that are falling below that threshold are the ones that need the help the most.
Sure.
So we're starting to see more and more in that coming along the way as well.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So if I want to learn more about Orion, where am I going to go?
You can go to our website, very creative, www.orionfi for fleetintelligence.com. You grab our phone number off of there, depending who your insurer is. We have a growing number of partnerships, so maybe worth asking your insurer, asking your broker, a bunch of different paths.
Great, great. John, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And if anybody out there has a compelling story and wants to hop on the Claim Hunters for an episode, head on over to the subroiq.com page and hit the podcast button.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for joining the Claim Hunters. We hope you enjoyed our show. If you would like to share your story, head on over to subroiq.com and click the YouTube button.